burgeoning bloom wreckers. Oscar could barely sleep that night. He wanted to go to the bleak beach after his day ended at the umbrella shop, but the weather had turned particularly bad, and Bilious had heard rumors that a blander wheel might be on its way. By the time they got back to Dove, it was trunk clumpeting, and after dinner, it had picked up to an alfer. Bilious removed the wooden window savers from underneath the couch and fit them over all the windows in the apartment. "Better safe than sorry," he said. "Statistically, an alfer turns into a blander wheel 68% of the time. I might just nip down to the lobby quick, Oscar said. "I want to try giving Sage a call." "All right," Bilious said. "But be quick. I feel better when we're both tucked in safely for the night." In the lobby, there were just two people in line waiting for the phone, and Oscar shuffled back and forth while they finished up their calls. When it was his turn, he dialed Sage's number, then bounced up and down and prayed Mr. Cleverer didn't pick up. He was lucky. Mrs. Cleverer answered. "Hi, Mrs. Cleverer, it's me, Oscar." "Oscar, dear, how are you?" "I'm fine. I was wondering, could I say hello to Sage?" "Of course, dear. I'll have her pick up in the living room, and I'll just stay on the line here in the kitchen in case you need anything." Translation: she was going to listen to the entire conversation. Shoot. How was Oscar going to manage this? He needed to tell Sage that the weather was bad in the tow and that she couldn't come home tomorrow. But Mrs. Cleverer didn't know she was coming tomorrow, and now she was going to stay on the phone while... "Hi, Oscar," Sage said brightly. Oscar took a breath. "Hi, Sage. What's up?" "Oh, I just think, Oscar." How could he talk about their plans for tomorrow without Mrs. Cleverer understanding him? On the other end of the line, Mrs. Cleverer cleared her throat impatiently. Oscar was frozen. He couldn't speak or think. "I was just playing a solo game of burgeoning bloom wreckers," Sage said. "I love that game so much. Of all my games, I think it's the dearest to my heart." "Dearest?" Sage had said the code word. But the code was a written thing. How would they work it into a conversation? "Anyway," Sage continued, "I don't think our connection is that good, but I assume that's why you're calling. You had a question about the rules, right? Didn't you just get a copy of the game?" "Yeah," Oscar said, playing along. "Yeah, I did. That's why I'm calling." "Right. Well, I think it gets tricky in the later part of the game when the main characters are trying to decide whether to go to their secret meeting." "Exactly," Oscar said. I don't think they should go." "I thought you might say that, but they have to go. Otherwise, they can't advance to the next level. But in the game, you know how you roll that one die and it tells you what the weather will be? I rolled it and it said the weather will be really bad when they meet. It just feels too dangerous. Sometimes you know that's how a thing is worth it, because it feels a little dangerous," Sage said seriously. "It will be fine, Oscar. You have to take some risks in burgeoning bloom wreckers, or else you'll never get to the final level and rescue the entire city from the evil empire." There was a long silence. And finally, Mrs. Cleverer spoke. "Was that your only question, Oscar, dear?" "Yeah," he said. "Yeah, it was. Thanks, Sage." "Of course, Oscar. Let me know how the game goes." "I will." Oscar hung up the phone, and only then did he realize just how much his hands were shaking. He didn't move for a few seconds, and then someone behind him gently cleared their throat. "Are you done with the phone, son?" It was Mrs. Carmichael from the fourth floor. She had her pet parrot on her shoulder, as usual. "Yes, sorry, Mrs. Carmichael," Oscar said. "I just need to call over to Finch and make sure my sister remembered to put her window savers up. Supposed to blander wheel tonight. I haven't seen a blander wheel in a few years now. Oh, I don't love all the noise." "You know where to find us if you need anything," Oscar said. "Sweet boy," Mrs. Carmichael said. "Tell your father I said hello." Oscar ran up all seven floors to Chateau Buckle. He burst into his living room and out of breath and red-faced, and Bilious, who was making a pile of towels in the center of the living room, paused, studying his son. "Everything all right?" And because Oscar did not know how to answer that question, because he had no idea how to possibly convey his father all the levels on which everything was very much not all right, he simply forced a tight smile, nodded, and went upstairs to his bedroom. Blander Wheel, Part 4. And that is when the blander wheel hit. Just kidding. But we're really, really, really almost there now. Promise. weathering the storm. The offer continued through the night, and there were times when the storm came close to tipping into Blander Wheel territory, but it kept pulling back, as if dipping a toe into a body of water and deciding it was much too cold to jump in. But still, an offer was no walk in the park, and Oscar and Bilious took turns wiping leaks from the windows and making sure the window savers were still sturdy and in place. They filled jugs with water in case the pipes shut off, and sure enough, they did, around midnight. "Go on up to sleep," Bilious said then. "There's no need for both of us to suffer." "Are you sure?" "I'll wake you if I need you." But Oscar couldn't sleep, and for the longest time, he lay awake in bed, staring up at the ceiling, listening to the screaming rain outside. He was scared. He didn't know how Sage was going to make it to East Market tomorrow. He didn't know how he was going to make it to East Market tomorrow. Offers were known to bring flash floods, turning the streets of the alley into a literal lake. He'd roll the die, and it clearly said the weather was too dangerous. But Sage had insisted. And the weather north of the wall was so much different from the weather in the toe, anyway. Maybe she'd make it just fine? Oscar tried to close his eyes, to relax, to fall asleep, but he was just feeling too anxious. So he got off his bed and looked underneath it, where he stored his wood carving supplies. It had been so long since he'd had any energy to work on his carvings, but it was pretty clear that he wouldn't be able to sleep tonight. He picked up the block of wood, He picked up the block of monk wood. Its warm and comforting weight felt good in his hands. But he put it back under his bed for now. He still didn't know what to make with it, and he knew it had to be perfect when he finally started carving. He picked up an interestingly shaped piece of driftwood instead. It was long and skinny, with a bit of a bulb on one end. He turned it over in his hand, studying the grain of the wood, letting it speak to him. And then, suddenly, he could see the animal hidden in the wood. It was a walrus! Oscar grabbed the new wood carving tools Sage had given him for his birthday and jumped back on his bed. The anxiety and fear left his body as he concentrated on the carving, releasing the walrus from the wood, watching the animal take form. He carved for hours. Then he took a small square of sandpaper and smoothed the walrus's skin, going over every inch of the animal until it was perfect. His bed was covered in wood shavings by the time he was done, but he was happy with how it turned out. He set the walrus down on his nightstand next to Wib and fell asleep almost instantly. A treacherous journey. Oscar woke early the next morning, and the first thing he did was detach the savers from his bedroom window to check the state of things. The rain was still crashing down, but Oscar was relieved to find it wasn't a Blander Wheel yet. He wasn't even convinced it was still an Alfer. It might have downgraded to a Heller. The main difference between a Heller and an Alfer is that a Heller is accompanied by slightly less rain, and the rain itself is slightly thinner and slightly warmer, which lends itself to a quicker evaporation rate. But it was hard to tell those two apart. He'd really have to be outside to feel the rain to decide what it was. Sometimes rain was just like that. It insisted that you touch it, smell it, taste it. There was rain called silk, which felt exactly like silk. There was a rain called grit, which was dirty and coarse between your fingertips. There was a rain called lemon, which tasted and smelled exactly like lemons. There was even a rain that somehow fell quite hard, but didn't carry any moisture, so nothing actually got wet. This is probably the rarest rain of all, and it is called psych. You could live an entire lifetime in Rhone and still not know all there was to know about rain. But Oscar had a feeling he knew more than most people. He found Bilious soundly asleep on the couch downstairs, and because he didn't know how long his father would stay asleep, he decided that it was now or never. He needed to leave. He dressed quickly in long pants and a long-sleeved shirt and a waterproof utility jacket and thigh-high rubber rain boots that were pristine and basically brand new. Because, of course, he usually refused to wear them. Then he grabbed a few things he thought might come in handy, including a heavy waterproof flashlight and a roll of waterproof duct tape, and quietly left the apartment. He was immediately glad he had worn the boots, because when he stepped out of the stairway and into the lobby of the Dove, he found it flooded with 3 or 4 inches of dirty water. But that was nothing new. The lobby had certainly flooded before, and if you looked carefully at the walls, you could see the stained lines that marked the height of each previous deluge. Someone had even helpfully dated them. It was Dove's own little museum of rain. All the buildings of the alley were made to withstand rain and flooding and wind, and a little bit of water on the floors was hardly something to be alarmed about. So Oscar took a deep breath and splashed his way across the lobby, then pushed out into the heller. He knew it was a heller as soon as he felt the first drops on his face. That was a good sign. Still, the streets were gushing with shin-high water, which was a bad sign. He doubted the bus to Bleak Beach would be running in this. A few inches of water on the ground, and sure, they'd keep the service going, but this was about 6 inches or so, and Oscar wasn't so confident. But still, at least he could make it to East Market on foot. He started in that direction now and passed just a few people on his way. Some people grunted greetings as they went or waved their hands without looking at him. But one young father with a toddler on his shoulders paused and smiled widely. "What a morning, huh?" he said. "I have to admit, I love a good flooding. Always have." Oscar actually smiled at that. "Yeah," he said. "Honestly, me too." And he did. It was fun to splash through the streets of the alley, pretending he was a giant navigating a great roaring river. But he realized after a minute of this that Sage wouldn't have nearly as easy a time as he was having. Although her wheelchair was, of course, designed to withstand a tremendous amount of water, he wasn't sure it would move easily in this at all. And it seemed like the water was only getting higher. By the time he reached East Market, it was almost up to his knees, and it was slightly less fun to trudge through it. Most of the stalls at the market were shuttered and empty, but he did find one open. Mr. Glizzard, an impossibly old white man who Oscar suspected might actually live in his market stall, was there, bright-eyed and selling his customary hot coffee and sticky buns. "Oi, you there," Mr. Glizzard called when he saw Oscar. "It's Oscar, sir," Oscar said politely. "Oscar Buckle." "Ah, Bilious's kid. Knew you looked familiar. What are you doing out on a day like this?" "What are you doing out on a day like this?" Oscar countered. Mr. Glizzard laughed uproariously. "Touché, son," he said. "Come here and let me warm you up with a mug of something hot." Mr. Glizzard poured Oscar a cup of coffee and handed over 2 enormous sticky buns. He waved away Oscar's money when he tried to pay. "Thank you," Oscar said. "We have to stick together," Mr. Glizzard said with a wink. "We who weather the storm, you know." Oscar smiled and thanked him again, and then went to wait in Nico's empty booth for Sage, because of course she would come there, if she was able to. The coffee was piping hot and the sticky buns were warm and gooey and soft, and Oscar inhaled everything in about 3 minutes flat. Then he waited and waited. He didn't actually know what time it was, and it was impossible to guess because, of course, he couldn't see the sun. The sky was like an artist's palette of only grays, every shade of gray imaginable, from washed stone to smoke to steel to pewter to ash. There were probably as many names for all the shades of gray as there were for rain. They went hand in hand, Oscar thought, at least in Rhone. He waited some more. He got up and paced around, then sat again, then stretched, then sat, then attempted a series of jumping jacks, which ended with him becoming considerably wetter than he'd been a few moments previous. He sat again. He waited again. And then he heard an interesting splashing noise that seemed to be getting closer and closer. Finally, he saw Sage turn a corner and paddle her way toward him. Oscar wasn't sure exactly what he was seeing. Sage was sitting in Dot, but the wheelchair was floating on the water. Oscar leapt to his feet and met her halfway down the aisle. "Wow," he exclaimed, "this is genius." Covering each wheel of the chair were flotation devices, which caused the entire thing to glide easily across the surface of the water. There were weights and counterweights hanging from the front and back of the chair to keep Sage balanced, and she held a short paddle in her hand that she used to push through the water. Her spillin umbrella was, as usual, open and attached to Dot, keeping everything nice and dry. "Thanks," she said, beaming. "I made it."
"You made this?"
"Yep. I drew up the plans last week. They are actually kind of easy to make." She fell quiet, biting her lip before continuing.
"Look, Oscar, when you told me what you found about the weather machine, I didn't even listen to you. Sage, I totally get it. He's your dad. I should have found a better way to tell you, or gotten more proof first, or... I know he's my dad, she said, and I didn't want to hear anything you were saying. But the truth is, sometimes I feel like I don't even know who he is. He always worked so much, you know? And when he's home, even before we moved, he's always busy and distracted, and it feels like he likes being at work more than he likes being with us. Sage, but I should have listened to you. Even though he's my dad and I do love him, of course I do, I had this feeling. She looked up at him then, and her eyes were red and shining. I had this feeling like I knew you were telling the truth. It's been really hard for me to accept that, and I'm sorry. I wasn't ready to hear any of it. You don't have to apologize, Oscar said firmly. Not for anything. I'm the one who should be apologizing. It seems like we're both doing a lot of apologizing lately, huh? A lot's been happening. Yeah, Sage agreed. And that's why I broke into my father's study myself when both of my parents were out at the market. I found the secret drawer that you told me about, and I think you're right. I think there's a weather machine in Gray Lighthouse, and I think we need to go there and figure out how to dismantle it, and then we need to tell everybody the truth about Braun Industries. Even though your father works for them? Especially because my father works for them, Sage said. I know it's a long shot, but maybe there's a chance he doesn't even know, or he doesn't think it's real, or he doesn't know the whole truth. I don't know, Oscar. I don't know what to think. But I do know we have to get to that lighthouse. Here, I brought some supplies. She gestured to a very stuffed backpack that was hanging from the back of her wheelchair. I thought we could check out that abandoned boatyard. Maybe I can fix up one of the boats enough so that we can take it out there. Actually, Oscar said, I have a better idea. And he told her all about his visit to the factories, his conversation with Frederica, and most importantly, the existence of an underwater tunnel that led to the light, that led right to the lighthouse. When he was done talking, he realized that Sage had gone quite pale. What? He said. I don't super love the idea of an underwater tunnel, she admitted. Do you super love the idea of capsizing in the middle of the gray sea? Oscar asked. Sage laughed. Nope, tunnel it is. Should we go now? No time like the present. I doubt the bus is running. Me too. That's why I added this to my design. Sage turned Dot to the side, revealing a little platform at the back that looked like it was meant for someone to stand on. She adjusted some of the weight, moving more to the front of the wheelchair, and gestured for Oscar to hop on. Are you sure you can paddle both of us? Oscar asked. Oh, definitely not, Sage said. Then she pulled a small prop motor from under her rain jacket. Are you kidding me? Oscar squeaked, totally impressed. Did you make this too? Yep, Sage said, blushing a little. I've had a lot of time on my hands lately. Just attach it to that hook right underneath the platform, then press that red button. And hold on. It won't go fast, so I can steer up front with the paddle. Oscar hopped on the platform and waited as Sage adjusted the weights again to make sure everything was perfectly balanced. Then he attached the prop to the hook, pressed the red button, straightened up, and held on. Dot took off at a respectable pace, and Sage stuck the oar in the water in front of her, using it as a makeshift rudder, which is something that is usually used to steer a boat, not a floating wheelchair. It took her a minute to get the hang of steering, and they bumped into quite a few things as they made their way out of the market. But then it was pretty smooth sailing. The wheelchair boat probably only went for about 4 or 5 miles an hour, but riding it was so much fun. Usually rudders go in the back of the boat, Sage called over her shoulder, but this isn't really a boat. Anyway, and since we're going so slow, I thought it would work. And it does. How did you make it to the tow anyway? Did you take this all the way from Roan Pierce? Nope, Sage replied. I didn't have to. There aren't any floods north of the wall. Right, Oscar said bitterly. Of course not. I took the bus to the central market. They have these massive storm drains just south of the wall. All the water goes pouring into them. I never really noticed them before. They must be able to cover and uncover them when they need to. Basically, I was able to pass the wall and then inflate my wheel wraps. Sage, I think you might be the smartest person I've ever met, Oscar said. She flashed Oscar a bright smile. It took the better portion of an hour to reach Bleak Beach, and their progress slowed considerably the closer they got to the shore. And the water deepened considerably the closer they got to the shore. And the rain increased considerably the closer they got to the shore. By the time Black Beach came into view, It was offering again, and the water was at least 2 feet deep. Then the prop motor gave a sick kind of cough, sputtered, and died completely. Out of gas. That actually lasted about 15 minutes longer than my calculations suggested, Sage said. But no worries, I can paddle the rest of the way. Oscar hopped down from the wheelchair's platform and gasped at the sudden chill of the water. It came up to just under his waist, and it poured into his heavy rain boots, rendering them completely useless and very heavy. Luckily, he'd worn his sneakers underneath, so he wasn't completely barefoot when he slid off the boots and abandoned them on a park bench. "Where's the tunnel entrance?" Sage asked, shouting now to be heard over the roar of the storm. "This way," Oscar said. They figured out that the fastest way to forge onward was for Oscar to hold Dot's handles and push as hard as he could while Sage manned the oar, rowing as hard as she could. Still, it was hard and tiresome work, and they were both out of breath and exhausted by the time they reached the old boarded-up entrance to the old boarded-up aquarium. "In here?" Sage asked incredulously. "Yup," Oscar said. "Creepy." "Yup. Hand me my backpack, please." Oscar removed the backpack from the handles of the wheelchair. "Geez, what's in this thing?" he asked as he handed it over. Then he burst out laughing when Sage pulled out a crowbar. In our world, a crowbar is mostly used to pry things apart or open, like a wooden crate or two boards that have been nailed together. In Oscar's world, the average citizen of Rhone owns a crowbar to assist in weather-related tasks, such as pulling a window saver if a storm was expected to be so bad that you decided to nail it in place. "I came prepared," she said, clearly. Sage fit the crowbar behind one of the many planks of wood that covered the front door. It took a few good wrenches, but she managed to detach one side of a plank, then the other. She did two more boards, then handed the crowbar to Oscar. "Can you get all those taller ones?" she asked. Oscar removed a few more planks, and after several minutes, they managed to uncover a section big enough to squeeze through. The door had once been glass, but was now mostly shattered, and they made sure to be careful not to cut themselves on any of its jagged edges. And then they were inside. The space was big and open, and there was a fair amount of light filtering in through high windows all around them, in places where wooden planks had become unstuck over the years. In fact, there was just enough light to see the massive shark that was swimming through the air on its way to eat them both. Downward. "Oscar, you need to stop screaming," Sage said calmly. Oscar opened his eyes. The shark was still in midair, still aimed directly at them, but it wasn't moving. Oh, that was because it wasn't real. It was a model of a shark. "Shark," Oscar said weakly. "Actually, that's an orca," Sage said. "A killer whale. It's not a shark. It's not even a whale. It's a dolphin. It has as many teeth as a shark. Actually, the average great white shark has about 250 more teeth than an orca. But I see your point. And at any rate, it isn't real." "Yes, I can see that now," Oscar mumbled. "And sharks don't fly through the air," she added. "Okay, I get it. So where is the tunnel entrance?" "In the basement," Frederica said. Oscar's heart was still beating very fast. He felt a little foolish that he'd thought the giant creature suspended from the ceiling was real. But to be fair, he was pretty on edge to begin with. "Over there," Sage said, pointing. "It looks like a directory." There was considerably less water in the aquarium than there was outside, only about a foot on this floor. That probably had something to do with an enormous staircase in the center of the space, which led downward to a lower floor of the building. All the water that made it into the aquarium was rushing wildly down those stairs, transforming them into a literal waterfall. Oscar found himself wishing for an elevator, even though that seemed extraordinarily unlikely. The directory was in pretty good shape, though, so that was lucky. The entrance to the tunnel was down one flight of stairs, then all the way in the back corner of the building. "I don't suppose you brought a chairlift," Oscar said weakly, in such a sad and small voice that he and Sage looked at each other before dissolving into a fit of wild, high-pitched laughter. Then Sage pretended to dig around in her backpack for a chairlift, and that made them laugh even more. And when they stopped, Oscar felt better, like he'd laughed out most of the fear and anxiety from his body. The mood felt lighter as they stood as close to the stairs as they could without fear of being swept away. "This isn't ideal," Sage said. "Right. But it isn't a total roadblock either." She withdrew a coil of sturdy rope from her backpack and held it up for Oscar. "I don't know about that," he said nervously. I have my wheel wraps, she reasoned. They'll help me glide down the stairs. We can attach one end of the rope to the top of the stairs, and I can lower myself down slowly. We can wrap the rope around my handles and use them as a sort of pulley. A pulley changes the direction in which something, like a rope, is pulled, which does, in fact, decrease the amount of exertion needed to lift the object being pulled. In this case, Sage, Oscar, and Dot. You can use multiple pulleys to further decrease the weight of a load. Physics. Actually, you can come with me on the platform. The extra weight will make us sturdier, and it will probably be safer for both of us. Sage, didn't you just say I was the smartest person in the world? You should trust me. Oscar smiled. I said you were the smartest person I'd ever met. Close enough. Let's do this. They set it up like this. Oscar got close enough to the top of the staircase to tie a knot on the banister. The knot he uses is called a double figure eight fisherman's knot. Nico had taught him how to tie it once, and it is sturdy and, when properly tied, won't come undone. Then he tied the same knot to Dot's bottommost horizontal bar just underneath the standing platform. They took off the prop motor and left it aside. He made sure to thread the rope around both sides of the wheelchair to keep the weight distribution as even as possible. Next, Sage adjusted her hanging weights to be half on her left and half on her right. I have approximately 14,000 doubts about this, Oscar said, as he carefully stepped onto Dot's platform. That's about 12 less than I do, Sage said with a chuckle. But before Oscar could question her, she let out a few feet of rope and they went barreling toward the top of the staircase. They were teetering right on the edge now. The wheelchair tilted at a stomach-churning angle. Imagine yourself on a seesaw, the exact weight of the companion across from you. If you both lifted your feet, you would hang somewhere in the middle, gently bouncing up and down. That's basically what it was like for Oscar and Sage now, right at the edge of the stairs. You have 14,012 doubts, Oscar shouted over the crashing of the water. Yup, Sage yelled back. And then she let go of the rope. Once again, Oscar screamed. Once again, Sage asked him to please stop screaming. They'd plunged downward about 3 or 4 feet, but Dot was miraculously still upright. Can you please go a little slower? Oscar shouted. I'm trying, Sage shouted back. This isn't exactly easy. And look, it's working. Yes, yes, fine, good job, but be careful. Sage let out a little more of the rope, and they glided somewhat more gracefully down another foot, then another. They were about halfway down the staircase when they heard a tremendous rip. Sage froze. Oscar twisted his head around to look up at the top of the staircase, and his stomach sunk when he saw what had made the noise. Part of the banister had lifted up from the floor, and as Oscar watched, a second part lifted and the rope slipped. And the wheelchair plummeted downward. A general rule, one doesn't want to plummet down a waterfall. This meant that they fell quickly. One would do much better gliding down a waterfall or floating down a waterfall. But it seems too late for that now.